What's up, everybody, and welcome to Cindy's Birthday Party, the internet's greatest, most profound, most prolific hip-hop podcast in the entire universe. It's a hip-hop podcast that's going to look at rap music and hip-hop culture in general from a philosophical and historical perspective. My name is Danny. I'm one of three co-hosts. I have my other two co-hosts here who I'm going to introduce. The first I'm going to introduce is a guy that I've known for about 15 years. Used to be co-workers with great friends. He is, we're broadcasting from the Real Fan Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Two of us are not from Atlanta, but this gentleman is from Atlanta. He is as Atlanta as an Atlantan can be, if that's a word.
Yeah.
He actually has roots in the Atlanta hip-hop scene all the way back from the 90s, and that is my boy Zay.
What up, ATL? What's up, everybody? Nice to meet y'all on Facebook, Instagram, and all y'all other social media sites. It's nice to finally get on this radio and speak some truth to y'all.
Right. Even though we're not on the radio, Zay, we are
well,
on the podcast.
But
I know what you mean.
Thank you.
Good enough.
We'll just call it internet radio.
Well,
right?
That's the Percocet talking, so we're going to go, we're going to keep it real. So,
and he doesn't mean that in the hip hop sense.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, he's
he legitimately
just,
needs Percocet right now.
He had a surgery, and he actually had to have Percocet because of the surgery that he had. Not because he's out here trying to get high or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
And our other host, our other co-host is another person that I've known for a long time, an even longer time. I've known him since we were in high school.
Yep.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this person, the first time I saw this dude, he had on a black Kangol, the dome Kangols, not the kind like your pops wears.
Not the Samuel L. Jackson.
Right, not that type. He had on a dome Kangol and a pair of Cazals. If you know anything about early hip hop, those were like the greatest glasses in the universe at that time.
Ever. I almost lost my life a few times over
right.
the glasses.
And that is my boy Eric.
What's happening, fam? It's your boy E. Basically, that's what I go by. Makes things a lot simpler, actually, because I'm lazy and I don't like saying a lot of syllables, so E works just fine. Came up just loving hip-hop and just, you know, I'm glad to be here with these fellas here who are, you know, enjoyable people, and I enjoy being around all of them. And we are going to discuss hip-hop from the element of being older and a lot wiser. And so, like Danny said, we're just going to take it to a different level, and hopefully y'all enjoy it, man.
And that is, I'm glad you said that, because this is coming from the perspective of three guys who are three black men in their 40s. Three guys who have literally been there since the beginning. We've seen it in its infancy stages. We've saw it as a teenager.
Yes.
And we see it now as it is itself a 40-year-old.
Right.
So we're going to give our opinions on that. A lot of what we talk about is going to be from historical nature. And like I said earlier, philosophical. But we'll also touch on a lot of things that are currently going on as well. Because one thing that we've learned and one thing that people will learn in general is that whatever music that you loved and you listened to as a kid, you are going to love and listen to as an adult. Mm-hmm. So don't think you're 16, 17, 25, 30, whatever you are, and if you love rap music now that you won't still love it when you're 45, because you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because these two guys can attest to that.
Still do.
I'm not of age yet to really be able to say that, but you
right.
know.
Even though he older than I am. So,
right. So Jose, so Eric kind of gave a little synopsis of what he wanted to get out of this, or what he thinks we should present. What do you really want people to get out of this podcast?
Well, first of all, like I said, because this is three guys in their 40s, I want, first of all, what we say on our show is right. So that's first and foremost.
The old guys are right.
Right. We're right. But, you know, to be honest with you, I just want you guys to understand we're just looking at hip-hop from a different perspective.
Yes.
More so than the average hip-hop listener. And even the young kids, even though y'all don't like to listen to the wisdom of the old heads, I guess sometimes we're gonna bring people in that's gonna give us a young perspective. So it's not just gonna be geared towards everything that we know and love.
Right.
We're trying to cater to more than just one
genre.
Yeah, this
is not a that That's a key statement, because this isn't necessarily a get off my lawn type of thing.
Correct. Right?
It's not just going to be some old dudes talking about, oh, it's all garbage.
Right.
Which it is, but but that's not what we're going to do all the time. We will discuss from time to time why we do or do not like certain things.
Right.
And we'll do a compare and contrast to, you know, what we feel is the golden era and how we feel about rap music today as opposed to then.
Right.
But it's not going to always be, you know, just because we don't want to do that. We don't want to create something where we're just trying to tell young people everything.
We don't want to alienate you young folks out there and you millennials who do listen to hip hop now. And while it may sound a bit unusual to us, it's your brand of hip hop now, and mm-hmm. we want to incorporate you into that.
And hopefully we can find some common ground.
Indeed. Right. That's the one thing I think is missing between younger folks in hip-hop and older folks, especially the artists now, because a lot of them, they always have this attitude of, man, them old cats, they don't know what's the boy that didn't know Biggie's lyrics and went up on stage and had him, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Which is extremely annoying.
It was. It was ridiculous. Yeah. But, yeah, we don't want to alienate you younger listeners at all. We want to incorporate you and bring you in on this, you know. So.
Right. So one thing that listeners may notice, if you've clicked on this link on Facebook or on some form of social media or maybe through our website, it's called Cindy's Birthday Party. And you may be wondering to yourself, why is it called Cindy's Birthday Party?
We don't mean the Brady Bunch, Cindy.
Right, exactly. So if you know anything about the history of hip-hop, maybe you don't, maybe this will be something new to you, maybe a little bit of a history lesson. Hip-hop was started by a guy named DJ Kool Herc. It was started in the Bronx officially on August 11th, 1973, at his sister Cindy's birthday party. So his sister wanted to come up with a new way to raise money going back to school for back-to-school clothes. So she threw a little party at 1520 Cedric Avenue in the South Bronx. And her brother, Herc, they called him Herc because I think his name is actually Clive Campbell.
It is, yep.
Was a 16-year-old. Think about that, folks. This guy started hip-hop. He was 16 years old, and it is now a global cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, absolutely.
But her brother, Kool Herc, was going to be the DJ for her party that she was holding at in the Bronx. I think it was, I read somewhere, it was like 50 cents for boys and 25 cents for girls.
Right, yeah, real simple price. Right. Nothing major. They weren't trying to gouge people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason that's the birth of hip-hop is because Kool Herc did something that nobody had ever done before, in that he extended the breaks on the records that he played. So the James Brown records that dancers really liked that had the drum breaks that maybe were only 15, 20 seconds long. I think the drum solo on Funky Drummer, for example, which is a James Brown record, is maybe 15 seconds, something like that.
On the original one where he is, there's a Funky Drummer and there is a Funky Drummer reprise, which is just Clyde Stubblefield just going off.
By the way, Clyde Stubblefield was the drummer for James Brown, whose drum solo on the Funky Drummer is really one of the foundational blocks of hip-hop.
It's fantastic. It really is.
Even though Clyde himself always said he didn't like it.
Right. He actually said, yeah, he didn't like it. And that, yeah, I think also that James didn't pay him any money for that.
Well, that's not a surprise.
Right.
But Kool Herc, getting back to him, he found a way to take breaks like that in records, the parts that the dancers liked, and extend them. So now they weren't just 20 seconds. They'd be 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And he said that the dancers responded positively to that, and the dancers would stay on the floor, and they loved it. They went crazy over it. Mm. So he would extend the breaks, and, of course, those who danced to those extended breaks were later called break dancers.
Right.
Which is, break dancing is also one of the elements of hip-hop. So it all started with this kid in the Bronx at his sister Cindy's birthday party, and that's why we call the show Cindy's Birthday Party. It is a tribute to the creator of the culture, who was DJ Kool Herc. Although we will primarily speak more on MCs and on rappers, I think, on the show,
yeah,
you guys say. But we still wanted to pay homage to the man who started it and let people know that really hip-hop culture started with the DJs. It didn't start with the rappers. That's
correct.
Just kind of where it is now.
Exactly.
Right. So that's just a brief explanation, I guess, on the history of how it got started and why we named the show what we named it. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, I want to start with you on this, Jose, because you had a very interesting story. Like, Eric and I both, I think, our earliest interactions with hip-hop music, or with rap music and with hip-hop, was more New York-based. But you told me that growing up in Atlanta, you had a much different perspective.
Yeah, you know, growing up in the projects in Atlanta, my dad, he loved music himself, so, you know, every weekend was a party for us. And I was introduced to hip-hop, but at that time, I wasn't really aware that it was hip-hop. But he would, he'll, you know, in between his James Browns and Earth, Wind, and Fire, he would throw an African Bambaataa song on. He played Planet Rock in the middle of him DJing for everything else. And, you know, we would all dance to it, not necessarily knowing what this song, what it was really about, you know. And even the Sugar Hill Gang, I was introduced to that, you know, back in those times when my dad would, you know, have his jukebox going on during the weekends. I really didn't fall in love with hip-hop until about maybe 85, when Run-DMC was out at the time. And the funny thing about it, this is a true story, right, as a matter of fact. In elementary school, fifth grade, you know, I was like the smart kid in the class, right?
That so must the have teacher been a slow was class. So,
see, the Percocet's not going to allow me to have a good comeback for that, but it's going to come later.
Keep
on.
Keep pushing,
exactly.
Right.
But you know, my teacher threw a little party or whatever, right? And she was like, "Jose, you can bring whatever album you want to bring." And I brought my Michael Jackson album, right? I'm like, yeah, this is
Which
the greatest
thriller,
thing smoking. It was a Thriller.
Okay. Understandable, you know.
Greatest thing smoking from my perspective, you know. But at the same time, when I brought my Michael Jackson Thriller album, the other kids was bringing Run-DMC and Houdini, right? And it just totally drowned my music out. And I'm like, what in the hell? You know, y'all don't crapped on my Michael Jackson. But at the same time, who is these dudes? You know what I'm saying?
Right. The paradigm shift was happening right before
your eyes. It was happening right before my
eyes,
man. And ever since then, man, I've been in love with hip-hop, man. And so every time something came out, especially when the 90s hit, late 80s, 90s hit, and we had MTV Raps, and every time it come on, man, I record all the videos. So I sit back on our fresh, brand-new VHS, and we be watching hip-hop videos all day long.
Right.
It would piss my dad off, because at the time, we only had one TV. So he'd come off and, turn that mess off, turn it off, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because to your parents, it was always mess.
Yeah, it was always mess.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's my story, you know. That's when I was introduced into hip-hop and fell in love with it.
Cool, man.
Yeah, so Eric, for you, what would you say, or is there anything that really, at a moment that you would say, a seminal moment where you said, wow, I really just love this? Or has it just always been something that was ingrained in you, maybe from such an early age that you don't really?
Terribly early age, I guess, to where it wasn't known by a kid my age. Almost like what Zay was saying, it was music being played. And this is grew up in Brooklyn, born and raised. And, you know, music at the time was probably, more R&B. Of course, you know, 70s R&B, which was cool. And that was what black folks listened to. But gradually you heard this stuff going on over here and there'd be block parties and things of that nature. And you'd hear some guy, there's a DJ DJing, and then some guy would be on the microphone, yes, y'all, and then talking about people in the crowd.
Right.
And basically his job was just like to shout out people in the crowd and also to shout out upcoming events that were going on and rhyme them, and some would rhyme them, some wouldn't. And it's like, okay, that's catchy to the ear.
I'm going
to
let you finish that, but I just want to say shout out to Coke LaRock, the very first MC, because that's what he did, Eric.
Right.
He did exactly what you said. All he was doing really was shouting out people in the party.
Exactly. And that's what MCing really, really the basis of MCing is, just some guy shouting out people in the crowd. And then he'd talk about events that are going, hey, at the Fever Friday night, so-and-so, we're going to have blah, blah, blah is going to be there. And that's, you know, while a song was playing.
Right.
And so I heard that as a young kid, and gradually the radio picked up on it. BLS, WBLS would pick up on it. I think at the time they had WKTU 92.
WHBI.
And yeah, and they played, at best, I guess rap was the Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. You'd hear a lot of Afrika Bambaataa, you know, that kind of stuff.
Maybe a little Cold Crush mixed in.
Cold Crush, they had some other, some other artists. And it was small, slight samples of it. Mm-hmm. And you sometimes would have to wait until like 2 in the morning to even hear this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'd actually stay up as a kid and listen to this stuff. So,
man,
you know.
Didn't it make you feel good, though, when you hear a DJ shout your name out, though?
Actually, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
It makes you feel kind of,
yeah.
Like, no, it feels good now. Like right. At a party, somebody, you know, they shout out to E. They go big E out in the, you know.
I used to love it, man. Yeah. For those that don't know, by the way, like I said, the Percocet got me kind of riled up. You know what I'm saying? I understand y'all got questions. This ain't no opioid crisis going on or nothing like that, man. I had surgery last week, and the doctor prescribed Percocet just for the pain. It just so happened that Percocet make you feel good.
Hey, man, we're actually setting up an intervention for him now. So, definitely. Yeah, we understand 100%, Zay.
But I'm glad you explained that.
Yeah.
But for me, I think that I was aware of rap music, and I liked it, but I didn't really fall in love with it until about 86, maybe 87, because it was like, you know, when I think about, especially as a kid in South Carolina, so it's different, I grew up outside of Charleston, South Carolina, so I was not in a major metropolitan area like you guys were. And when you talk about no rap being played, I mean, there was no rap being played. For young people now who listen to rap music everywhere all the time, there was a time when it wasn't like that.
No doubt.
It wasn't only at the very beginning. It was like that for probably over a decade.
Yeah. Easily.
Where the only time you heard rap music was late at night on the weekends for a couple of hours.
Yep.
You know, they had the midnight mix, and you're playing for 2 hours, and then that was
it. Hell, it wasn't enough music to even play for, for an hour.
That
so,
was
yeah,
a part
hour
of it
or two,
too.
And so.
And that was a part of it. But I liked it in the early days. You know, because I don't know, there was always something magical about a dude talking and rhyming to the beat. That's kind of separated it from music before. But one thing that I've realized, though, as I've gotten older, is that for our generation, we, even though rap was something new, we basically still liked the music that our parents liked.
Absolutely.
If you look, all the beats that we sampled were from guys
went in the
basement and got mom and daddy's records.
Thank you.
I think that's what made it kind of cool, too, because, like, you would hear a song, a rap song, and somebody would be rhyming over a song that you already recognized.
Right.
Especially in the early days.
Oh, yeah. I used to love
it. And I know there's a YouTube channel called The Foundation by this guy named Jaquan. He's from Virginia. I suggest for anybody who really wants to look at hip-hop from a scholastic approach to check it out. But one thing he talks about is how in the early days, like even for Rapper's Delight, it's not an actual sample. It's a house band playing the record for what, you know, they'd already heard.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's still the same music that, you know, they were playing in the clubs or whatever. It's the same music that our parents liked. It's just that, you know, somebody wasn't singing over it. They were rapping over it.
Right.
And I just thought, for me, I think, you know, around 86, 87, when the music changed and the era, it got into a more sample-heavy era, and the guys, the MCs got more serious on the mic, especially, you know, Rakim. Anybody who knows me knows how I feel about Rakim. But that's when I just went, you know, it was like the clouds parted.
Yeah.
The sunlight came through. And like,
Yes.
That's when I just really fell in love with it at that point, man. And then from then to now, it's just been like, you know, one of those things. It's almost like breathing for me, you know.
Hmm. Yeah.
And but I think that the reasons why I loved it so much was because it spoke to something in me that, you know, as a teenager, sometimes you can't always express things the way you want to.
Right.
So some things just touch you in your soul and you don't necessarily know why.
Right.
You know, or certain You know, Eric, I always say, like, well, really for all three of us, we went to high school in the Deep South. And, you know, for us, in a lot of ways, some of us may have been first or second generation to go to integrated schools.
Right.
You know, and there's certain things that come with that. Maybe the racism is not as overt as it used to be. Maybe it's covert, and maybe you can sense it and you feel it, but you don't know how to express it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in rap music, especially in the early days, it kind of gave you an outlet. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. that's what I feel. You know, when I listen to Public Enemy, that rage I might have had inside.
Oh, yeah.
Chuck D was expressing that rage.
Yes.
Well, even before, like, the 80s, like, when it first, like, started getting going, I embraced it as, I guess, how our parents embraced rock and roll. This is ours.
Right.
Like, this is our stuff.
That's
like, they had rock and roll, and maybe their parents had, like, I don't know, big band music, you know, that kind of stuff was theirs. You know, I'm serious. You know, like, that was theirs.
Oh, wait. Aaron, how old your parents are, man? You said big band music.
My mom's 79 years old.
Oh, okay,
man. My dad, if he was living, he'd be 81.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm 49, so it's, you know. But to me, it was like, okay, this is our stuff now. Like, we can take, we hear from the beginning, and whatever this turns into, however long it lasts, at least we can say, I was here from the beginning, and this is mine.
Yes.
And that's how I kind of felt about it. You
and
know?
The however long it lasts is so interesting, because we can all remember a time when they said rap music was
Was going to go.
It was a fad.
Yeah,
it
was
it's
a fad.
It's going to be like disco. It'll be gone in 10 years. Yeah. And now here we are looking at 40 years of recorded rap music.
Right. You know,
we're going to say something to say.
No, well, no, I'm just saying people. That's how people looked at it, as a fad. And yes, it is ours. Now, my question, though, is today's hip-hop a young man's game, though? I think that's, like, one of the biggest questions that I question myself. Because I know me, myself, like, there are some artists out here that are young artists. They're pretty good, you know what I'm saying? But for whatever reason, because who I am, I expect something different other than, you know, like, I expect what I used to expect back when I was in my 20s, you know what I'm saying?
There's a couple things to that. One, you're never going to feel that same level of excitement and magic at 40-something that you did when you were 13, 14 years old.
Right.
I think that's with anything.
Right.
You know? And then we do love, you know, we all have a lifetime love for this genre of music.
Right.
So we're still going to like it. We're still going to love it. There's still going to be artists we're going to check for. We're always going to look for that new thing. But I don't know if we'll ever feel, like, I don't know if I'll ever feel about any artist the first time I hear him, the way I felt the first time I heard Rakim on the mic.
Right.
Like, that will probably not be. But we can, that doesn't mean you can't still enjoy it, though.
Right.
You know, it's just that it may not be woven into your subconscious
the
way that it would have been 25, 30 years ago.
And I think for me, to kind of follow up on what Zay is saying, it is, you do have this sort of expectation of what you liked when you were first listening to it, and you want everyone to kind of follow that, that kind of following that mode.
Right.
And when they stray off, of course, then you go to this get off my lawn kind of mentality where it's like, well, he's garbage. We can do without that.
Right.
And there have been some artists, new artists right now that I've like listened to. My son has introduced me to some artists. Joey Badass, for example, when he came out with Waves is one of his songs. I'm sure a lot of y'all know about it. It sounded like what I was used to hearing back in the day. The beats were solid, and he was blowing over it, wonderful. And now he's kind of gone to this type hip hop where these guys are kind of mumbling and fast rapping. And now I'm kind of like, what happened to you, Joey? Why did you go to this? And I'm almost treating him with this get off my lawn mentality.
Right,
but I hold out hope that he still will kind of come back to, you know, what all of us are kind of used to hearing. You know, we still have that. We just have that stuff that we're used to hearing, and we want to hear still from everybody.
And
but
I think we always,
things
we,
change.
We always have to remember, too, that, you know, they are very young, in some cases young or very young, and that they're going to evolve, and their tastes are going to evolve and grow. And so it doesn't always necessarily have to evolve and grow in the same direction that ours do.
Right.
And that's one of the things I try to keep in perspective is that, hey, I'm in my 40s. There's no way I'm going to always like what a dude in his 20 likes.
That's true.
Because I don't think the same way in my 40s as I did in my
20s. No.
So that's going to be a big part of it as well. Now, there are certain things that I think are universal, and I think from a certain perspective, from a certain angle, we can be somewhat judgmental about. I hate the word judgmental because it sounds so negative, but our parents did not grow up with rap music.
Right.
So rap music was completely foreign to them. Mm-hmm. So when my dad walked in the house and said, them hip hop rappers on there mumbling and da 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 da, you know, he didn't grow up with rap music.
Right.
So I can't expect him to be able to relate.
Right.
It's a little different for our generation now. You guys both have kids. I don't, but your kids are listening to it, but you also grew up with it.
Right.
So your understanding of it is going to be different in relationship to what how it was with your parents.
Yeah.
You know, so if you say that it's trash, you're actually basing it on something.
Right.
You're basing it on, hey, I heard this when it was in the golden era, and this is this and this, and it's not. Now, that doesn't mean everything you say is trash is going to actually be trash.
Right.
But there's some legitimacy to your argument.
Right. And I think if I call something trash, mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily calling it trash because although it may be a trash song,
right?
It just it's just a bad song. I base it off of my expectation. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I actually try not to be as judgmental because my kids, they try to teach me, be like, yo, dad, it's just different. You know, I get it. You know. So I try not to totally trash it if my expectation of the song is higher than what it should actually be.
Yeah, you sometimes have to leave your expectations at the door and just listen to it with kind of a fresh set of ears for what it is. And like you say, some of it is actual trash.
Yes.
Some of it is actually trash. Yes. It's like, this is garbage, man. It's like, how did this get on the radio, man? But it's on there, and that's what, you know, the younger folk seem to think is cool to listen to.
Right.
But, yeah, it's at least, like Danny was saying, Zay and I having kids, we come at it with some experience in the game, whereas our parents, like my mom, thought Public Enemy was just noise.
Right.
Straight noise.
And a lot of it was, in a sense, but there was a lot of whining and squealing and noise making.
They had a song called Bring the Noise.
I used to think the way they put those songs together, even though I thought Terminator X was like a terrible DJ, that's a whole nother story in itself.
Got you.
But the way they would put the beats together, and it all came together beautifully, to me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, but my mom thought that was absolute garbage.
Yes.
But like you say, she has nothing to base this upon.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
At least we have something to base it upon where we can say, like, hey, man, come on now. We've listened to, you know, Eric B. and Rakim. We've listened to LL Cool J. We've listened to Big Daddy Kane. And this stuff here is, like, nothing like that.
All right, I'm going to say this, right? And
anytime he says, I'm going
to
say
there's something to it, right.
This is my biggest issue, I guess, what I have with trap music, right? I don't have a problem with trap music per se, the fact that it's its own genre, right? But it seems to me that every single producer in the trap music genre uses the same freaking program.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can you say this song sound better than this song when they use the same freaking program? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The beats sound exactly the same. The artists, I can't even tell who the artists are because they sound exactly
the same. Right.
I would agree. Our one of our assistants and our intern, Corbin, who's a young guy who's like 24, he's back here saying, thank you.
Yeah.
So he agrees. But I would say, to play devil's advocate on that, though, Jose, even though I personally agree with you 1,000,000%, I think, too, is because if you're not really into something, it tends to all just kind of blend together as one.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, like, you know, if somebody who's really into sneakers, they know every pair of Jordans, and they can tell you the differences between each year's Jordans and whatever. If somebody's If somebody who's not, the only thing they can tell you about it is, hey,
they Jordan.
They got the Jumpman logo on.
Right.
Exactly.
So I think part of it is what you're into.
Right.
But I would say that there are artists, newer artists, that I've tried to get into, And some of them I just can't. Like, you know, I listen to them and I'm like, I'm sorry, this is just not for me.
Right.
There are other ones, though, that I've listened to that I really like. You know, like you mentioned Joey Badass.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that I really like, you know. He's a cat in California named Fashion.
Yes.
Love his stuff, mm-hmm. man. The dude gets down. I don't know why he hasn't blown up. I think, too, a lot of what our issues are have to do with how the music is marketed and promoted.
Right, I was just about to get on that because it seems that the quote-unquote mumble rapper is what's kind of being marketed on the radio
right.
now.
Yes,
that's
right.
what the radio wants to put out. And there are a lot of young guys who still get down with the same flow that we are used to.
There's still a lot of heavy rhyme
spitters
out there.
Right.
They don't necessarily get that level of
promotion. They don't get the promotion. They don't get the radio play. So they're kind of stuck in obscurity just out there. And you kind of have to hear by word of mouth or just happen to, oh, man, I heard so-and-so, this dude, oh, he's nice. But you don't hear him on the radio. You don't hear him putting out any albums or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that, you know, those people get kind of stuck. It's like you say, the way it's marketed,
it's,
makes a
it's
difference.
It's almost like they've just said, okay, there can only be two guys commercially who are lyricists, and that's Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole, and everybody else has got to
right.
be
right. Right, it's got to, yep.
I think that's why it's important that we actually get young people's opinions because and to come to that happy medium because I think what I see some like you just mentioned J. Cole or Drake or whatever, or Kendrick Lamar, I think what one thing that they do to keep them successful is the fact that they kind of adapt to the style of rap that's out at the time. Because mm-hmm. if you mention those three guys, right, they're almost like old school rappers.
Well,
right?
I would agree with you on two of those. I would not put Drake with them. I think.
Well, I just don't want my wife to hear you say that because yeah, if she will, she'll argue with you.
But I just feel like Drake to me, and this is Danny's opinion. Drake is the epitome of the difference. You know what? We'll save that for another day. But I'm just not a huge Drake fan. I'll leave it at that.
So your Drake bias is showing.
Right, right. Because I will get into that. But that's a. In the words of KRS-One, that's another chapter in another book.
Right.
So we'll definitely deal with that at some point in time. Well, we're about to go ahead and take our break and wrap up this first segment. And in our second segment, we're going to get into a topic that we know everybody's going to love. So for now, we're going to end this first segment, but definitely stay tuned because you definitely want to hear the second part. Everybody.